The story of Jamie Dimon is the story of modern Wall Street. He sits atop the country's largest bank as CEO and chairman of J.P. Morgan Chase. He oversees more than $2 trillion in assets and a 250,000 employees from Manhattan to Mumbai. He was there when banking went from button down and by the book to flashy and too big to fail, through the 2008 financial crisis and into today's era of even bigger banks. And now presidents, prime ministers, princes, and sheikhs seek his counsel. So who better to ask about President Trump's tariffs and trade war, the income gap, and the recent criticisms of him by Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren? So Elizabeth Warren said in Iowa the other day, "Our democracy has been hijacked by the rich and powerful." And you jumped in and said this week about her that she was vilifying successful people and having harsh words for Wall Street bankers.
What I was commenting on is that anything that vilifies people, I just don't like. I think that, you know, most people are good, not all of them. I think you should vilify Nazis, but you shouldn't vilify people who worked hard to accomplish things. And so my comment is, I think it's American society. We're just attacking each other all the time.
She said the system is working great for the wealthy and well-connected, and Jamie Dimon, she brings you up, doesn't want that to change.
I'm not going to comment on anyone in particular.
But she's commenting on you. You've become a target. Whether you want to respond to it or not, you're her target and you're Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's target.
I understand that a person in this seat is going to be a target in this day and age of certain politicians and stuff like that. But the notion that I'm not a patriot or that some of these other folks aren't, that's just dead wrong. So, you know, my view is let's all work together, and I don't mind if a few barbs are thrown my way by anybody.
You're tough.
I'm not that tough, but there's nothing I can do about it.
The stock market is going through the roof, and yet manufacturing production is down over the past year. Wage growth is slowing. So when you look at the state of the economy right now, what do you see? Do you see strength? Do you see petering out?
The consumer, which is 70% of the U.S. economy, is quite strong. Confidence is very high. Their balance sheet's in great shape. And you see that the strength of the American consumer is driving an American economy and a global economy. And while business slowed down, my current view is that no, it just was a slowdown, not a petering out.
You sound pretty optimistic about the economy.
Well, I am.
Well, what about the issue of unpredictability right now on the economy? Is that worrisome to you? It must be worrisome to every businessman in the country.
The world is unpredictable. I think it's a mistake.
Well, more unpredictable than usual.
No. If you look at history, if you take a newspaper and open it any month of any year, you'd have the same list of hugely unpredictable things.
We've had multiple wars in Iraq. Why doesn't it feel that way? Why does it feel as if we were in a particularly uncertain time?
Human nature looks at fear and reacts to the short run. But again, there have been like 50 or 60 international crises since World War II. Almost only one really affected the global economy in the short run.
What was that? Vietnam?
Vietnam did not. Vietnam, obviously, it's totally changed America. But it was the oil crisis in the Middle East in 1973 when oil went from 2 to 20 and we had a global recession. There have been wars with India and Pakistan. We've had Iraq, Afghanistan, Korea, Vietnam. China had wars with Vietnam. China had wars with Russia. None of those things affected the global economy. And the other thing is, people look at the negatives. There are positives. The Berlin Wall went up. The Berlin Wall came down.
And the economy wasn't affected? Is that what you're
barely
saying?
Barely. This is the most prosperous economy the world's ever seen, and it's going to be a very prosperous economy for the next 100 years.
Dimon's even unfazed by the trade war and President Trump's imposition of tariffs on China.
I've been in China, and the Chinese will say, he brought us to the table.
You know, the tariffs, it's like a bomb that you detonate, and the problem is it falls on you. Yeah. The bomb falls on them, but the bomb falls on you.
Yeah, the risk of tariffs was that it ends up more being a trade war as opposed to a quietly negotiated thing. It has to be resolved. This is not going to war, okay? This is trade and economics, and resolution would be a good thing, and so I hope that takes place.
China is the far eastern frontier of Dimon's global financial empire that he oversees from his office at J.P. Morgan Chase's headquarters in New York City. This is vast.
This is the heart of the bank's empire. Little trading is done on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange these days. Traders mostly buy and sell over computers on their own trading floors. This is one of several at J.P. Morgan Chase.
This is one of six trading floors in the building. There's like 450 people in this trading floor. In equivalent to this in London, half of this in Hong Kong, and in 23 other countries around the world.
J.P. Morgan Chase moves more money in a day than most countries earn in a year.
We move $6 trillion of money every day. We deal with 10,000...
Every day.
We deal with like 10,000 clients, which include governments, central banks, mutual funds.
And wealthy individuals, including about half the world's known billionaires, an exclusive club that Jamie Dimon himself belongs to.
Money every day.
He was born in Queens, New York, the grandson of a Greek immigrant who did well enough to become a stockbroker. Dimon's dad became one, too, so it was in the family. After Harvard Business School, he went straight to Wall Street, where he climbed quickly and helped usher in the age of the mega banks, earning a reputation as a ruthless cost cutter. He became CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase in 2006, when profits were soaring on Wall Street and the financial crisis was brewing. In the early days of the crisis in 2008, Dimon got a phone call from the head of one of the largest investment banks on Wall Street at the time, Bear Stearns, which was teetering on the verge of collapse.
The CEO of Bear Stearns called me up and said, "Can you lend me $29 billion before the night's out? Because if I don't get it, I'm going to go bankrupt." But I said, even I can't get $29 billion.
But then the Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, leaned on him to buy Bear Stearns.
And Hank Paulson said, you got to buy it. And I said, if I can responsibly do it, I said, I can't jeopardize my own company, we'll do it.
3 days later, he did it. He bought Bear Stearns for $1.2 billion.
We thought we saved the system. We thought that would have been the domino that would have caused the whole system to go down. And it was because J.P. Morgan was strong that we can do it. Pointed out in Congress, it wasn't like buying a house. That was buying a house on fire.
But it was banks and other financial institutions that started the fire by bundling trillions of dollars worth of risky mortgages and selling them, knowing in many cases that they were toxic, to investors around the world. This eventually led to the financial crisis that nearly brought down the global economy.
Looking back, do you think that there were some bankers who were outright immoral and unethical? They knew exactly what they were doing.
I believe there are people, I'm not giving you the names, who were greedy, selfish, did the wrong stuff, overpaid themselves, and couldn't give a damn. Yes.
Greedy, reckless. Were you?
No.
Do you take any responsibility for the financial crisis
No.
in 2008? But your bank sold those same kind of mortgages,
mortgages. I do take some. We participated. So did mortgage brokers, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, the government policy. But yes, we did. And it was a huge error, and it was hugely damaging.
The banks were bailed out, and the little guy whose mortgages crashed lost his or her home. Many families were destitute,
yeah.
And that unfairness has just really hurt the sense that this country's working correctly.
I totally agree that, if you're the average American, you'd be angry it happened. There's no Old Testament justice. Too many people, a lot of people lost their reputation, their money, but too many people didn't, and, the small guy got hurt. So I completely agree with that.
And I mean, the idea that the banks were bailed out and they caused the problem to begin with, the sense of unfairness doesn't begin to explain the fury.
Yeah, I would feel the same way. I'm agreeing with that. I think we let the American people down. But also, at the same time, because we were strong, we bought Bear Stearns. We saved, 15 or 20,000 jobs. And so there's two sides to that story, too, a little bit. Only one has been told well.
Let's talk about the wage gap in this country between the rich and almost everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
How much of a problem do you see that?
I think it's a huge problem, and I think the wealthy have been getting wealthier too much in many ways. So middle-class incomes have been kind of flat for maybe 15 years or so, and that's not particularly good in America. But in particular, at the low end, You know, 40% of Americans make $15 an hour or less. They've particularly been left behind.
You're talking about people who earn very little money. Listen to this statistic. Compensation for executives, CEOs, grew 940% in the last 40 years. Your average worker, so middle class grew 12%.
We haven't done a good job growing our economy, and that would have fixed a lot of that problem.
Executive pay. Last year, you were paid $31 million. Too high?
The board sets mine. I have nothing to do with it.
Well, you could return some of it.
I could. Is that going to solve any of those problems?
I don't know.
Is it going to solve any of those problems?
No, but you could set an example, say, I'm not going to take all that money.
Okay.
I don't need it.
I could. I'm going to leave it to the board to set my comp. Not you, not the press.
You've answered
my board,
every one of my questions,
my
but this one you're fobbing off.
Yeah, the board has to do it.
Well, let me ask it in a general way. Should executive pay in this country be curbed?
What does that mean?
Cut back. Should there be a way to say, we're not going to have such a spread between our workers and the guy at the top?
You know, when you say something like that, you got to say, how are you going to do it? What does it make sense? I think you use the tax system to do that. I would not have cut the tax on the rich. I would have expended your earned income tax credit instead, which is like a negative income tax for lower paid people. We probably should change the minimum wage, which I don't think has been changed for like 10 or 15 years. There are solutions to these problems. The problems are real. It does not mean free enterprise is bad.
Free enterprise has been very good for Jamie Dimon and the bank. Last year, J.P. Morgan Chase earned $32 billion in profits.
Please welcome Jamie.
One of the things he does as CEO is hold regular town hall meetings with employees, like this one in Delaware, to build a sense of team spirit.
Hello, everybody.
It struck us, though, as less like a banker's convention than a political rally, which led us to ask,
did you ever think of running for president?
I thought about thinking about it.
You thought about thinking about it?
I talked to one person and I decided to think no more.
I'm asking you because we came upon a quote of yours. You said, I think I could beat Trump. I'm as tough as he is.
I'm as tough as he is. I'm smarter than he is. And by the way, this wealthy New Yorker actually earned his money. It wasn't a gift from daddy.
President Trump responded in a tweet about Dimon. He doesn't have the aptitude or smarts and is a poor public speaker and nervous mess.
I've seen him after that. And when I walked in the Oval Office and he said, see, you would love to have this office, wouldn't you? And I said, not really.
In his office, Dimon's known as the great survivor. In a career that spans nearly 40 years, he's managed to navigate his way through just about every panic, boom, and bust.
You're the only CEO who was running the big bank back during the financial crisis who's still there. You're the survivor, last man standing.
It's a dangerous place to be.
Talking about survivor, you did have cancer. Tell us about that. How did you discover it? It must have been terrifying.
I was shaving. I felt a little lump here. And I went to see my doctor, and he felt and said, you have throat cancer. And when someone says to you, you have cancer, it is, I mean, it's almost unimaginable, like a punch in the face and a fear. And of course, but the hardest part, honestly, was telling my family. I just didn't know how to do it. And I said, I'm going to tell you something, but I'm going to be okay. And the second I said it, it was mayhem.
Wow.
You know, and the thought that I couldn't tell my parents. So I had my wife call. I just couldn't tell them that there's somebody died before them.
Oh, my God.
And so you're going through all this stuff, and so.
And you're clean.
I'm on my fifth year, so that's so
that's
far,
it.
So far,
that's
so good.
That's what they say. Did you ever say I should resign?
No. I love what I do.
You know who really loves fresh food? Amateur chefs, barbecuers, smorgasborders, snackers, bakers, and throw it in the microwavers. At Ralph's, you can get all the fresh you want at a great price with same-day pickup and delivery. Because we believe in fresh for everyone.
Why not be an online orderer? Shop our app or Ralph's.com and try delivery or same-day pickup today. Restrictions apply. Ralph's, fresh for everyone.
Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, is testing out a new kind of business investment in the city of Detroit. The idea grew out of Dimon's interest in changing the way the bank was engaging in philanthropy. He wanted to try and tackle a major national issue, like urban poverty, by applying the same kind of expertise and analytics to the problem that the bank uses to advise big corporations. His first target, he said, would be the city of Detroit just after it filed for bankruptcy.
So Detroit is probably one of the biggest failures of an American city that we've ever seen. My view is, why can't we make Detroit an example of America's exceptionalism? Have people roll up their sleeves, get together, and change the tide of history right there, right now.
So in 2014, Jamie Dimon picked up the phone and called the then new mayor of Detroit, Mike Duggan.
My assistant came in and said, Jamie Dimon's on the phone. And I said, that's an amazing coincidence. That's the same name as the president of the biggest bank in America. She says, I think it is the J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon. I didn't have any idea Jamie Dimon knew who I was. So I picked up the phone.
A
I recognized
cold call.
I just no warning, and I recognized his voice. He said, I want to help the city of Detroit.
For Mayor Duggan, the phone call was about as unlikely as his victory just months before. He won, surprisingly, as a write-in candidate, becoming the first white mayor of Detroit in 40 years in a city that's nearly 80% black.
Describe Detroit when you came in as mayor.
Half the streetlights in the city were out. How do you get streetlights fixed? A third of the buses were in the garage broken down. People were standing on street corners for hours waiting for a bus. There were only 8 working ambulances in the entire city. There were times you could wait an hour when you dialed 911, and between 2000 and 2013, 250,000 people left the city of Detroit. I mean, that's more than the entire population of the city of Buffalo. So if you can imagine everybody in Buffalo leaving in 13 years and leaving all the buildings behind and empty, that's what Detroit experienced leading up to bankruptcy.
This is what large parts of Detroit look like, a bombed-out war zone, abandoned factories, boarded-up houses. Initially, Dimon agreed to spend $100 million. Not a lot of money for the bank or Detroit. But he knew that J.P. Morgan had something, in a way, more valuable.
So it's not the money, and this is a very important thing. It was about the help, the advice, the consulting, the ideas, the human capital.
And it was about the data that the bank collects and crunches every day. More information about business and consumers than the government collects.
We use big data and artificial intelligence in running our businesses around the world for risk and credit and marketing. So here, we actually have huge data, too, about how people spend their money.
Where their credit cards
we
are showing up.
We can actually see where people spend money on credit and debit cards and checks and where they're spending, like at restaurants, et cetera. That one piece of data creates where you can open a store, where you can do something different.
Dimon had the analysts build a database just for Detroit.
So we know in a certain part of town that you're traveling 20 minutes to buy milk or 20 minutes to go to a restaurant, which means that a store could be 10 minutes away.
To help the young entrepreneur wants to open a restaurant, and you're telling him the best place to do it.
To help where you open a restaurant, where you put affordable housing.
The first order of business was affordable housing. Other investors, like the owners of Quicken Loans and Little Caesars Pizza, were already pouring money into the redevelopment of downtown. So the mayor asked Dimon to concentrate on the blighted neighborhoods that the bank's data identified as ripe for redevelopment, neighborhoods like this one in Detroit's North End.
So this is typical, huh?
Yeah, this is a really good example of the challenges that the Detroit neighborhoods are facing.
Sonia Mays runs a nonprofit housing development company. She's a lawyer, former investment banker, and Detroit native. With more than $4 million from J.P. Morgan Chase, she acquired 30 abandoned homes and vacant lots so she could work on revitalizing the whole neighborhood at the same time.
This is a big, significant investment that is really meant to kickstart other investors, homeowners, residents, coming into this neighborhood. I mean, look at this. This is not going to pull anybody here. You have to figure out how to deal with stuff like that. You really do have to attack everything that is blighted, that's potentially going to drive down property values.
So you have to do the whole street.
You have to do it block by block.
She's benefiting from J.P. Morgan's special program of steering funds to minority businesses that wouldn't otherwise qualify for them.
If you didn't have the J.P. Morgan special program, you wouldn't have gotten the funds?
We talked to a lot of other people.